Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, go to pnwa.org. And remember, if you enjoy these conversations, you think you'd like to maybe enjoy more of them, you can always pick up a copy of Write Within Yourself, an Author's Companion, available where all fine books are sold. Well, we've all heard, or many of us have heard, about the theoretical great indie publishing success stories, the author who takes himself or herself to create space or someplace similar, and through wit and guile and a fabulous story, finds great success publishing themselves. Well, I have with me today a person who did just that. Tracy Jarvis Graves published her first book on Create Space. That first book was called On the Island. And it did so well and was a New York Times bestseller that she was, in fact, picked up by one of the big six. And she's now being published by Penguin in her second novel, Covet, which will be out a week from today, on September 17th, is also published by Penguin, and I'm sure it will be an equally large success. How did she do it? How did it happen? Aren't you curious? I know I am. Let's find out by talking to the woman herself. Tracy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I'm great. I'm happy to be here.
Well, it is my pleasure, Tracy. You know, I was reading an interview with you. I don't know when it was written, but you said something in it that I just made me so happy. It pleased me right down to my writer's bones. The interviewer, Michelle, I forget her last name. Anyway, she asked you what inspired you to write On the Island, and you said just love, 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 love desert island stories. Am I getting this sort of correct?
Yeah, I do. I really do like the desert island premise. I always have.
Do you know why that pleased me so much, Tracy?
Why?
Because it showed me that you learned the first, and you probably didn't even know this, but you learned the first and most important lesson that writers have to learn. And you'd think it was self-evident, but I can assure you it is not. It is that to write what you love. Just write
the thing
you love the most.
I was just going to say that, yep, that's why I decided to write the book that I wrote, is because I just decided I was going to write what I love to write.
So tell us about that experience. You came to writing a little bit later in life, is that right? Some people get going at age 9 or 10, but you came to it just a little bit later, isn't that so?
Yeah, I waited really to start writing until my kids were in school. It was something that I had done a little bit in college, and I was always a voracious reader, but the writing kind of came a little bit later, and I thought that, you know, I wasn't getting any younger. I probably should get started on this if I wanted to do it.
And you were blogging first, weren't you?
Yeah, I had a really small blog. It was just a way to get started writing again. I hadn't written anything since college, and it was just a way to sort of ease back into it, and I wasn't really sure at that point in time that I would go on to write a novel, but I knew I wanted to start writing something. So I started the blog, and I had a really kind of a small readership, which was fine. The intent was, like I said, just to start writing again, and then I kind of segued into, if I'm going to spend this time blogging, maybe it would be better spent trying to actually write a novel, which was at that point in time just kind of a bucket list item for me.
So it's just a bucket list item, and so then you sat down to write. Sometimes, you know, when people, they dream about writing the novel, and then they sit down, and it is a daunting task because you suddenly understand all that you sort of don't know, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
How was it for you when you started writing that first, and was the first book, first full novel you wrote On the Island?
Yes.
Wow.
I didn't know what I was doing. I literally didn't know what I was doing. So if I wasn't actually writing, I was spending time on the internet. searching for the answers to the questions I had. If I had a point of view question or a structure question or pacing or, you know, how do you do this, I would Google it, or I would look up on some of the writers' forums that I hung out on. And I still say to this day that there's really no better way to learn how to write a book than to just write a book. As I wrote, I just kind of figured out some things as I went along. And I had some missteps. I had to go backward, and sometimes I had to delete. And I was actually 30,000 words in before I realized that the book would do better as a dual narrative. So that was a huge change that I made, that I really had to get that far to realize.
Yeah. But you had been a voracious reader, and often that serves as your first and most important education, I think, as a writer, because the what a story told in prose feels like is sort of embedded in you if you've read enough. Did you find that to
Absolutely.
Be the case?
Yes, yeah. I think there's a certain, you have an ear for it almost. When you've been reading for a long, long time, when you start to write on your own, you can hear kind of the cadence of the prose as it's coming out. You can hear it in your head, even as you're writing it, and you realize that your sentence structures need to be varied a little bit more. I mean, there's just a lot of nuances that you pick up by being a reader that I think are very helpful when you go to start writing.
Yeah, but of course, then you've got to learn about things like characters, and that's an unusual experience for people who have, I think, have never written a story to meet these people that aren't them, but sort of are them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was that the case for you?
Absolutely. They become very real after a while, and they start sort of deciding on things that they want to do in the book that were certainly not outside of my control because I was the one writing it. But I think as your subconscious kind of opens up and you really get going, the story sort of unfolds, and you learn a lot of things about those characters, and they become less static, and they kind of take on a life of their own. And that's one of my favorite parts of writing a book, is watching that happen and kind of waiting for it and thinking, you know, is it going to happen this time? And then when it does, it's really kind of great, because you're thinking, okay, here it is.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. If almost every writer, that's part of the fun, is the stuff that, in a way, you don't feel responsible for almost. Does that make sense?
Almost just kind of comes to you.
Yeah, yeah. I've always likened writing that what I'm doing with myself is much closer to listening than thinking.
Mm-hmm.
If that, in other words,
I would agree.
You know, you're really saying, all right, give it to me, imagination. I'm yours, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you finished this book. And by the way, so what was the hardest part for you in finishing that first book? Was it the seeing at 30,000 words that it was a dual narrative? What was the part that really tied you up the most in writing it?
I think really at about the 65,000 word mark, I was just tired. I was just sort of mentally tired, and I was working full time at the time, so I got up early every day to write, and so I was, you know, physically tired a little bit. And you just get to the point, at least I do, where you just want to be done, but you're not quite there yet. It's just kind of that final hill that you have to get over, and you know that you're so close. I mean, it's almost harder to be that close than it is to be at 30 or 40,000 words. So I had to kind of power my way through that last bit, because by then I was absolutely committed to the whole thing. I mean, I knew it was going to be a book. I was going to be able to cross that off my bucket list. It was actually happening. By that time, I was very invested in the story. I was getting excited to share it with others. So, I mean, that was tough, and that's always been tough for me with the three titles that I have so far, is just getting to the close to the end and then having to make sure you just get there. You can't stop.
Yeah, and it's critical what you just said, and it rolled off your tongue rather effortlessly, but I do think it's an important perspective for writers to hold, which is you are anxious to share it with others, and I think that as writers, it's very important to stay connected to the idea that you've got something that you love and are interested in, and you want to share it with other people, not that you just hope.
Absolutely.
You know, that you actually, like, this is a cool story, I wonder what this person would think of it. And you were able to hold that idea in your head as you were finishing it?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the carrot that I dangled in front of myself, was that, you know, if you just keep going and you're really excited about sharing this, that's fantastic, but you're not there yet. So
right.
Just put that thought aside, finish the work, get the work done, and then you can move on to the next step.
And so then the next step, you ended up publishing it through CreateSpace. Did you try to go the traditional route first?
Yes. I queried 14 agents. I queried the 14 agents that would have been the best match for the book that I had written. So
right.
Contemporary romance and women's fiction. So if agents were interested right. in those two genres, then they got a query letter from me, and I had a 100% rejection, form rejection rate. So
nice.
Nobody wanted
okay.
to even take a look at it
right.
at all. So at that point in time, I was kind of dead in the water.
And so how did that – that's a tough moment for a lot of
yeah.
people, and many a writer has been there. And so what? Mm-hmm. How did you handle that?
Well, the people that were actually reading the book, because none of the agents actually ever requested even a partial, but the people that were reading it, my beta readers, and I had given out some ARCs on my blog. I had some family and friends that read it, and they all really liked it and were saying,
yeah.
you know, that they couldn't put it down and that it was just really different and they loved it. And so I started thinking to myself that, well, okay, maybe the disconnect is not so much with the story, but just with the publication method. And so my critique partner and my husband urged me to consider self-publishing on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, having a paperback on CreateSpace, and those kinds of things. And I resisted for a little while. I just felt
yeah.
like that meant that I had failed. And
yes.
Even
yeah.
though self-publishing had come a long way, this was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
It's come even farther since. But I just kind of felt, I don't know, it just really tipped the wind on my sails, and I had all this excitement that just kind of dissipated. But then when I thought about it from a business standpoint, I thought, well, maybe there are others out there that would enjoy reading the story as well. So at that point in time, I really didn't have anything to lose.
Right.
I did, you know, I took 2 months after that, and this is a step I think I see a lot of self-publishers skipping, but I took 2 months after that to have it professionally edited and copy edited and find
right.
a cover designer and choose my cover art and find a formatter. And so during that process, when I was preparing the manuscript to be self-published, I actually got really excited. I remember just kind of thinking to myself at a certain point, well, I need to get past this because it's still a book. Regardless
right.
of how it makes its way to the marketplace, it is a book and other people may enjoy it. And I felt a huge sense of just accomplishment at that point in time. I actually reached my goal of writing a full-length novel, which I knew was something that a lot of people have tried to do, and we don't always succeed because it's not an easy thing. So I was pretty happy at that point. I mean, I was actually just, if that's all that happened, I was okay with it.
Yeah. You know, and it's an important thing to remember that, and this is no knock on them, but agents and editors read books differently than a reader does, a customer would. Because the
yes,
agent and
I
editor,
agree.
While they want to love the book, they do want to love the book, they can't help but think about how will it sell and can I sell it and so on. Whereas when someone buys your book, they want to like it because they've bought it. So
yeah.
they're already invested in a way that there's no way an agent or editor can be. They're going to have just a different perspective on it. And there's nothing, no knock against them, but that's just the nature of the business.
Yeah, it's a completely different business model.
Yeah. And so, and I remember, in fact, I did something similar, which is I did theater when I was a young man, and I was tired of getting rejections on my short stories and poems. And I said, you know, I'm just going to do a show. I'm going to find a theater to put it up in. And that way, myself, as the actor in this case, that way I can just bring it right to audiences and see what they think and just get
yeah,
a straight, honest experience. And I loved that experience. And so, okay, so then out it comes. So you put it all together, and that's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's like building your own house, right? You got to pick every paint, what's
yeah.
the paint and what's the door handles and all this, and
mm-hmm.
suddenly you're doing all this. And now you have a book on CreateSpace, you and 10 billion other people. And so how did that manage to find its way? Did you do all the things you're supposed to do? Did you Facebook it like crazy and tweet, or what happened then?
Actually, I didn't really go crazy. I kept going to my day job. So once it was out there, I would usually spend maybe 15 or 20 minutes in the morning just kind of checking everything out. I went on to a lot of websites and message forums where self-published authors hung out, and I just listened and paid attention to what was working for them. If there was a place that they could advertise their book and they mentioned it, then I would go and pull up that website and see what the terms were and the price. And I did end up running a couple ads, and they were very helpful. So
really?
About 15 minutes. Mm-hmm.
Ads were?
Ads are fantastic. At the time that I ran the ads, Pixel of Ink and eReader News Today and Kindle Nation Daily were the three that were probably the biggest, and they weren't easy to get into. I actually would stalk all of those websites and see when they were going to open up to sponsorships again, and the day they opened up, I was right there, submitting my book. It's very important as a self-published author that you make that buy link available to where your readers are. So the readers that are signing up for these newsletters or for these email blasts from these companies are the ones that are going to see your book. So it was really instrumental in getting it in front of people and a lot more effective than spamming Twitter or Facebook. I did have links on Facebook and Twitter, and I set up an author page, but I always try to figure out where are the readers that want to buy the book right now and how can I reach them versus just trying to send it to somebody on Facebook that I didn't know. I never did that. So I ran ads, and then I just kind of sat back, to be honest, and let the word of mouth grow. Which it did. It did slowly and steadily. It took 6 full months for that book to really take off.
Yeah, I believe it. And I think that's one of the things I feel like writers need to remember that you can do all this stuff, and I think you should do it if something lights up for you, like what you did. That obviously the ads helped, but in the end, mm-hmm. people have to read and like the book. There's no getting around that.
There's no marketing. People always want to know the marketing secret. What did you do? What did you do? What did you do? But honestly, if a large enough group connects with the book, they'll tell others, and it creates a snowball. And it'll take off from there. If it's a bad book or if it's a book that not enough people like, you can market all day long and it will never matter.
And so what did you think about it? Then it started taking off. Did you believe it? Did it seem to make sense to you, or were you astonished by that?
Well, I wasn't so much astonished because the feedback had always been really positive from the beginning, from the people that were actually reading it. And what happened was just the volume of feedback that made its way back to me just kept getting larger and larger. And I was just absolutely thrilled at that point in time. I mean, I remember telling my husband, this is the coolest thing that's ever happened to me. I mean, I think the day that I hit 20 sales in one day, up from 2 or 3 when it first published, I mean, I thought that was fantastic. And I was just so, so happy.
Yeah. It's it's a fascinating thing, isn't it, when you write something there all by yourself in your little cave, wherever that is,
mm-hmm.
and then these perfect strangers buy it, however they buy it, and they read it, and it means something to them. And it has to mean something similar to what it meant to you, because they had to connect to that same story the way you connected to it. And in that way, there's like this invisible thread between you and this complete stranger, maybe on the other side of the globe. I'm still... I just heard from this reader in Vietnam, and I'm like, that someone way over there found my book somehow. It's just amazing to me still.
Yep, I loved that. I loved hearing from readers across the globe because it made me think, okay, this book is actually reaching people that I never in a million years thought it would ever reach because of the internet and because of people able to buy ebooks. And it was just, I don't think I can remember being happier than I was during the time when it really started to take off. And it was just an amazing experience.
But it didn't end at CreateSpace. Eventually, Penguin came sniffing around. Were they the ones that picked up on the island?
Yeah. First, the agents came. All the agents that rejected
Johnny
me. Then
late.
They started emailing me
and
wanting to know if I wanted to discuss representation. And at that point in time, I was pretty happy.
Sure.
I no longer really needed a publisher because. Around the time that the agents started to email me, I was selling around 4,500 copies a day. I was on the New York Times bestseller list. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I was on the top 10 on Amazon ebooks behind The Hunger Games and 50 Shades of Grey trilogy. So, at that point in time, I was really happy, and that self-publishing thing was working out pretty well, but I had started to get some foreign publisher interest, and I realized that I needed someone to help me with those deals. So I did sign with an agent. She did a fantastic job and has done a fantastic job going forward. And it was shortly after that that she actually sold the movie rights as a movie option to MGM.
Awesome.
And that was still all self-published as a self-published author.
Yeah.
And then Penguin was the last that came in. They wanted to acquire On the Island and my second book, Covet, the one that will be out next week, in a two-book deal. And I had always dreamed of seeing my books on the actual shelves someday. So that was just sort of the final thing that I had hoped to accomplish and never, ever thought I would.
Well, you know, it's just fantastic. And I love this story. I mean, a lot of writers might be envious of it in a way, but I always feel like, you know, you did what you loved, you told a story you loved, and it found its way to people by hook or by crook. And I think that's all writers want to do, is to write something that they care about and share it with other human beings. And now you've done it in two different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And how great is that?
Yeah, I would agree. It was everything I had ever hoped for.
And so how was writing the second book? So you sit down, now you've had a little success under your belt, and now you've got to write the second book. Did you find that as exciting as the first one, or was it maybe a little challenging because now you kind of got to match yourself?
Well, there were things that were easier and there were things that were harder. First of all, I had started writing Covet during the time that I was querying on the island.
Good for you.
I took the advice that, you know, hey, while you're querying, get your mind off of it, start your next book. So I did. I started my next book, never really knowing that On the Island would ever do what it did and never really thinking that I would ever have a sophomore novel. I mean, at that point in time, that thought was so far out there. So, so when the two-book deal became apparent from Penguin and when that was all done, I was kind of confused at first because I wasn't sure which book we were talking about, and it was Covet. They were interested in Covet, which is women's fiction. So Covet's quite a bit different than On the Island, which is contemporary romance. So there were things, like I said, that were easier. I'd already done this once, so I didn't have to find out at 30,000 words that I didn't like the narrative and needed to add another one. I knew right from the beginning kind of what I wanted to do with it, and having done it once, the structure, a lot of things were easier, but also you're never ever going to get the way you felt back when you wrote your first book. Because when you write that first book, you don't have any expectations, there are no fears. One of the things that writers have to constantly battle, or at least I do, is, will this one be good too? Will I be good enough? Can I do this again? And it's really sort of self-defeating because you just have to write. You just have to bring it up. Story every single time, the story that you want to write, and know that it may be a book that people connect with. It may be one that they don't. They may not connect with every book. You hope they do. But it was more difficult, and I knew what I was in for. I knew that it was going to be mentally exhausting and a little bit physically exhausting, but I still enjoyed every bit of it because that's the thing I like to do the most, is write.
Well, you know, and all those questions is, will it be as good as the last one? These are all questions there isn't no way on God's green earth you can possibly answer. The only thing you ever know is this story interesting to me? Is this story something I want to tell? And am I telling it the way I want to tell it? And it doesn't matter if it's your first book or your 100th. That's really all you know, I think. I can't imagine how you could ever know anything else.
I think that's how I feel. I mean, that's all you can do.
Well, Lisa Gardner, when we interviewed her, the suspense writer Lisa Gardner, I always thought she really said it very well. She said, the writer's job is to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. To be comfortable.
Because that's true.
You can't, I mean, you all the things that you think you can derive comfort from, like, say, a 9-to-5 job where you go in and you know how much you're going to get paid and the job is waiting for you, and none of that does not belong to the writer. And you have to be comfortable without all the security that comes from many other types of careers.
Mm-hmm.
Even a bestseller like yourself has to learn to be comfortable with that.
Absolutely. You just do.
Now, let me ask this. This is a question I like to ask every writer I can, and the answers are always so interesting. So what I'd like you to do, Tracy, is finish this sentence for me. Okay? You ready?
Okay. Yeah.
If writing has taught me anything, it has taught me what?
To be resilient. To have a thick skin. And to trust my instincts.
Excellent. Now, do you think you were always resilient? By nature?
Yeah.
Or did you have to dig deeper the books?
I do think. I just... Yeah, I mean, I guess. I'm not sounding very sure of that, aren't I?
No, well, but you obviously discovered you had resilience. Whether you were or not, you found that you had thick skin and resilience. Because if you didn't, you would have, those 14 query letters would have done you in.
Yeah, and I think that's something that you don't often know if you have resilience until it's tested or until you have to. So that was really the first big test. And those rejections, they did hurt. I mean, at a certain point, I thought, this is done. I'm done. The story is horrible. Nobody will read it, and it's done. And I think you do have to overcome. And that's why I said, as a writer, you need to trust your instincts, because sometimes you have to turn off that inner critic that's saying, you know, you can't do this. It's not good. Nobody will want to read this. And not worry about it. You just have to go for it.
And trust your instincts. And of course, you also have to trust your instincts while you're writing, don't you? I mean, such an intuitive quality to writing, to storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's very true. You know when you're doing something you shouldn't be doing, and it's easier to correct it if you're just honest with yourself instead of writing it and thinking, well, maybe it'll be okay. But that's what your beta readers are for. They'll help you if you did try to sneak something like that in.
Have you ever had the experience? I go through this when I show people things. I don't show people my work much, but every once in a while I do. And usually there's something I've written in it that a part of me knows that didn't work, but I leave it in there anyway. And always, that's the stuff that my readers catch. Was that true for you?
Yeah, I'm one of those writers. I don't like to share my work with anyone before it's done. I mean, I'm not the type of person that would share my first chapter with someone or read half of this book. I'm only halfway down to tell me what you think, because I find that to be just really difficult and not helpful to the creative process. But yeah, when the book's done and I give it to my beta readers, I know that they're going to come up with something that I probably already know about, but I'm just kind of waiting to see if anybody else picks up on it, and they always do.
Is part of you hoping I don't have to go deal with that thing because I don't know how to answer that question, and maybe it'll be just fine?
Yeah, it's usually something I'm struggling with because I'm not sure how to fix it.
Right. And it never, ever goes by the wayside. They always know. All right, so Covet, so what's up next? So Covet's coming out in a week, and I'm sure it'll be a smash. And then what? Have you already sat down for book number three? Have you got that underway?
Yes. I started writing book number three pretty much when Covet was signed off on and had been through copy editing and everything like that. So I'm underway with that, and we're going to go back to contemporary romance this time. So this one's a little more action-filled, a little closer to On the Island. I really love contemporary romance and women's fiction, and I would like to alternate. So On the Island with contemporary romance, Covet's women's fiction. This one will be contemporary romance, almost even just commercial fiction. It's definitely got it's very plot-heavy, fast-paced, very hot and heavy romance. So I think that my readers are really going to enjoy it. I have no title yet, though, so I'm not sure what we're going to call it.
All right. Well, you keep that a secret, but you did the right thing, you know, just jumping right back in and starting the next book. You have the true commercial writer's instinct, Tracy. You were born for it.
I hope so.
Well, listen, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show. You're a busy woman. Your career is just starting off. I wish you all the best of luck, but I don't think you need it, I've got to tell you the truth.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed speaking with you today.
My pleasure. And everybody, listen, write what you love, just like she did. She said she loved the island. So that's what she wrote. And that's what you should write, too. Now, next week, same bat time, same bat channel, I'll have Susan Choi, very impressive Susan Choi, on to talk about writing and literature and God knows what else. And remember, if you like the sort of inspirational nature of this show, do check out Write Within Yourself, an author's companion, available on bookshelves and just for you. Until then, I want each and every one of you to think, what is the best possible thing I could share with another human being? If I had one person I love and I could share one thing, what would that be? And if you can find the answer to that, I'd say make it into a story. And you'll be happier telling it. And someone somewhere will be happier reading it. Think.